It is the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour. Two experts in the world of the federal government choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week it is Ron Marks of the George Washington University Homeland Security Policy Institute. It's great to see you, my friend.
Delighted to be here.
Thank you for coming in today. And Trey Hodgkins of Tech America, my other expert. Good to see you again.
Happy to be here.
Thank you very much. You have each chosen your selections for the three most important stories of the week. We'll have them linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we start with
number three.
Trey Hodgkins, your third most important story of the week is my colleague Jason Miller's story, headlined OFPP to hold acquisition workers more accountable for training. And we've gone back and forth about training in this town about for acquisition people for a long time. What do you see here that jumped out at you?
Well, I think it's important that they're going to compile this information in a central basis. It also reinforces the Federal Acquisition Institute, which all of the government acquisition institutes can always stand bolstering and reinforcing in more resources. And so this gives some of that to the FAI. I think it's also perhaps important for those that are left in the workforce, because we're seeing, you know, the retirement ages are pushing companies, people out, and of course the lack of career growth at the top ends of the marketplace now are forcing people to decide it's time to retire. So this gives the people that are there the ability to perhaps make them a little more marketable, more visible as marketable people, and they could better manage their certifications and move those things forward.
As you look at Jason's story, there are some things in here. You pointed something out before we went on the air that you thought was particularly noteworthy about this. But it's stashed away at the very end.
It is. I thought it was an interesting comment, though, and I was appreciative that Jason captured it and put it in there. I think Mr. Jordan was being sincere in his efforts to emphasize that they want to improve the workforce and they want them to have the right mindset and culture to drive best value for the taxpayer. I find a lot of irony that in though because of the multitude of conflicting policies that place significant pressures and burdens, particularly from an oversight angle, on the same community and force them to do the exact opposite, which is not try and find or establish cultures and get a mindset around taking smart risks, as the article notes, and having an entrepreneurial and an innovative approach. Instead, it is the trend we've seen, certainly over the last year, if not longer, is more and more of a drive toward lowest price. If it's technically acceptable, you're looking for the cheapest price you can find. And in fact, the entire structure and the mindset, unfortunately, in the current marketplace is that you get rewarded if you buy the cheapest product. You don't get rewarded for taking risks and having an entrepreneurial mindset.
Jason quotes Joe Jordan, the OFPP administrator, saying, "I want to provide them, the acquisition workforce, the top cover to do what's best, not what's least risky. Sometimes they're the same, but frequently they're not the exact same." And you're not the only person that's told me, Trey, that it sounds what they see happening actually at the desks of acquisition people is the opposite of what Joe's talking about there.
It's a sad condition we're in, but the community is a very risk-averse community. And when it comes to contracting and contracting decisions, they look for, you know, the pathway of least resistance and the pathway where they do not have to go to a supervisor for approval for some exception or a different pathway they want to choose, sort of that entrepreneurial thinking or taking some risk. And so we see the path of least resistance, the lowest common denominator, as the driver right now in a risk-averse community.
Trey Hodgkins' third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline, OFPP to hold acquisition workers more accountable for training. Ron Marks, your third most important story of the week is from the Washington Post. It's a David Ignatius piece titled Wide, Wide World of Surveillance. And this, as Mr. Ignatius writes, furor over the National Security Agency's surveillance activities is what David's writing about here.
Yeah, it's been interesting to follow it. I've been in this business for 30 years now, and there's always a part of me, once you've been in any business for a period of time, where you take a look at an article and someone is saying they're doing something, and my response is, yeah, you bet they are. This is what spies do. This is what spies have been doing for the last 5,000 to 7,000 years, or maybe even longer, when Og was sticking his head up over the side of the hill to try to find out what the other guy was doing. It's big, I think, in the sense of that people had not realized how extensive this was. Obviously, that was done on purpose. there have been some discussions about whether or not some of this stuff should be vetted to the public, at least to give them some clue about what was happening. But it's being done. It's been done. It's being done by the private sector as well in terms of following information on the net and in other places. I think the shock so far has been just the volume, the number of people involved. We've seen the budgets now leaked, and, of course, that's a shocking number, although if you've been around it for a while, not so much. And also what I find mostly amusing about this is everybody standing around a little bit like Casablanca in the casino where they're saying, you know, there's gambling going on here. So Germany, Mexico, Brazil in particular, and Mexico and Brazil are economic stuff. I understand where they might get a little bit out of shape on that. But they are certainly aware that they have other things that they're looking at. And the Germans, having spent a number of years on that topic, I can't begin to tell you how many services they have over there. And I mean different services who cover different issues. So this is all, you know, some of the extent it's public kabuki. In Germany, there's an election right now. Here we're looking at the 2014 election. It's picked up a lot of pace on it right now. But when it's all said and done, what I found amusing about the Ignatius piece ultimately was, okay, well, there's this big, wide, wonderful world of this, but guess what? You know, it's there. We're going to have to live with it. It's not going to go away no matter what kind of stuff Snowden and his compatriots leak out. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to happen.
Yeah. The concept of this that we used to hear all the time when privacy advocates would get all roiled up was, well, the government doesn't possibly have enough manpower or enough capability to look at every single person's everything. And that seems to have gone away with some of this. I don't hear that argument as much as I used to, because some of the things that Snowden has put out there seem to kind of be contrary to that idea.
Well, again, I don't think people really understand what kind of information is available.
Mm-hmm.
I was just at a session today at the Atlantic Council where a lot of people were kicking around, well, gee whiz, you know, we're doing this and this is not working and that's not working in terms of cyberspace. This game has only been around for about the last 10 years, and in a big way in about the last 5 to 7 years. So we're dealing with a fairly new phenomenon. Ultimately, we don't have the people who are going to look at all the information. That is just all said and done. They'll gather tons of it. There are data centers that are being, you know, built around the country, go long on data centers. Everybody wants to have one. But the fact of the matter is you can't look at all the information. Now, you do have tools available to you that allow you to sort through that fairly well.
Mm.
They were private sector tools to begin with. Again, I'll point at my friends at Google and some other areas. I mean, these are people who have a capability, Amazon as well, of really going through huge volumes of data. So that capability is there. But fact of the matter is, you know, just sort of bottom line, there are not enough people to sort through all of this kind of information. And even if there were at this point, you know, what are you going to do with it?
The Wide, Wide World of Surveillance by David Ignatius in the Washington Post. Ron Marks's choice for the third most important federal news story of the week. And you can find it and all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Second most important story of the week from Ron and from Trey Hodgkins when we come back on the Federal News Countdown in just a moment.
Here's Eric Olson, Director of Systems Engineering, Department of Justice, on the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility, sponsored by Dell Software.
At the Department of Justice, we think the future looks something like sort of a posture of mobile by default. So we're not talking about all the things, in essence, that we're dealing with now, so we're sort of over that. And we're building applications and infrastructure from the get-go, designed with mobility in mind from the very beginning.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Give your users the power to work efficiently and securely, no matter where they are or which devices or platforms they're using, with Dell Software Mobility Solutions. Whether you need desktop virtualization, mobile IT administration, identity and access management, or application modernization, you'll find the right Dell software is available through DLT Solutions. Discover how Dell Software Mobility Solutions can help your agency meet its mission and objectives. Visit dlt.com/dellsoftware.
At BAE Systems, we realize it's critical that our armed forces can get the job done, even when budgets are tight. That's why our engineers created the technology to transform an unguided munition into a precision laser-guided rocket, the perfect low-cost surgical strike solution. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, picture your family and home safe and secure with Ackerman Security Systems. Picture yourself controlling your system remotely on your mobile phone anytime, anywhere. Picture yourself getting video clips and texts of happenings at home before your kids get home from school. Picture everything you can do with the money saved by choosing Ackerman Security.
There's good reason Ackerman Security Systems is the Washington area's most trusted security company. It's because at Ackerman, security is all they do, and they do it better than anyone else. For just $18.95 a month, Ackerman monitors your home for burglary, fire, and medical alert. Already have a system? Switch for free and start saving. Call by Wednesday and get up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. The Information Sharing Environment has released its latest report to Congress. Agency tech people have some homework to do. Program manager Shmendra Paul joins us with what you need to know. Plus, Operation Live Well is opening up its front in the Defense Department. Could this be the end of whole milk? Those stories and much more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, this week selected by Ron Marks and Trey Hodgkins, and we are up to
number two.
And Trey, your second most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. Why the budget outlook is even worse than you think. And this is a countdown of, I believe it was eight items that Richard Cohen has put together for FCW. And this, as you read through this list of eight, this really doesn't give us much hope for hope, does it?
It doesn't. My summary of what he's identified here is just the vast divergence of issues and perspectives that we're faced with. And at the end of the day, what we're looking at, his analysis concludes, is that we're going to continue with the significant fiscal uncertainty in the federal government market. And we're going to talk a little more about some of this in a minute. But, we're looking at a CR. We're starting off the fiscal year with a CR in place. We're going to have the debt ceiling discussion, which will get tied into that somehow. I think we're going to avoid a government shutdown. That's pretty clear. Everybody has decided they're not going to play that game of chicken. But I think we will play some other games of chicken around the debt ceiling limits and what goes in, what doesn't. And I think that that's going to wrap the ability of the government to operate effectively, certainly probably until the end of the year. And an interesting note in all this is that we're still running under roughly FY10 dollar budget levels. And so we're not able to grow anything we're doing, and then you layer on top of that sequestration that's cutting from roughly an FY10 dollar amount. And so you begin to really have some regression in the federal budget, and it's not a positive outlook for the market.
Ron, when I look at this list of eight, the one that I think is really most troublesome is number three, avoiding the real money, which is this all has to do with the discretionary budget. Doesn't have anything to do with entitlements yet at all. And if we're talking about debt and deficit, that's really where the big problems are.
And we've been lucky so far in terms of the interest rates that are being charged here, too. One of the real hidden problems that I see out there, number one, is they're hitting discretionary because that's what they have immediately available to them. And the biggest portion of that is, of course, in DOD and the intelligence community. But also, which we've been gotten away with so far, is that the payments on our debt are about $400 to $500 billion a year on virtually flat to zero interest rates, 1-2%. If we start jacking up interest rates or people need to have more money to allow us to sell our money, that thing could go up to $600 or $700 billion. And somebody's going to have to find that money from somewhere. So I'm really crossing our fingers. I mean, so far, we've made out okay. But if we start jacking up interest rates in any way, shape, or form, and that's non-discretionary, you're going to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you find the money, whether you simply accept that you're going to have a larger deficit at that point or you continue to dig in, which is another reason why I keep thinking to myself this sequestration is going to go on for a while, in part because it's an easy, automatic way to do it.
Yep. What I have been surprised by, Trey, is that I haven't seen anybody in the financial or business media connecting what Ron's talking about interest rates with the tapering at the Fed and any action the Fed might take as far as slowing down or speeding up the presses.
Well, there was a little discussion today with the job numbers that came out. That's one of the thresholds the Fed created on their actions related to interest and its interest rates. And it seems that they're going to hold steady for a period of time. But you're right. There's not a lot of connection. And there's also the perplexing situation or performance, I guess, positive performance of a lot in the government sector market and their Wall Street performance. And that seems to have led a number of people to conclude that, well, sequestration may not be so bad. But I'm hearing that several agencies have concluded it will not get undone, and they're going ahead and proceeding now with roughly 9-year plans on how do they do this and how do they try to go forward.
That's the first that I've heard that kind of long-term planning, Ron. But the Pentagon's been very wide open about the fact that they're certainly counting on it, at least, it sounds like. No, they're not using those words exactly, but the tenor of what they're saying is this is what we're going to count on dealing with in 2014, at least.
Yeah, if you look at the future years defense program, if you look at the FYDP at this point, what you're seeing right now is them anticipating cuts of roughly 5 to 10% a year going out. Some of them much larger. A United States Army at this point, in fact, is probably going to take one of the biggest hits within DOD. I think they're all looking at it in terms of a minimum of 5 years. I've heard the 9-year number as well now, and just trying to anticipate where you cut. To some extent, you're going to have to cut big programs. On the other hand, you've got the personnel costs there, too. You could hear some mentions of pension plans and insurance plans and health plans and that kind of thing. That's something I must admit I did not even hear back in the 90s. I simply heard the cost of, you know, if we're going to keep X number of personnel here, do we have buyouts? Do we get these people out of here? How do we hang on to the ones that we need to have? I'm afraid what's going to happen on this thing, you know, again, going back to this last big period cut, is that, you know, it starts off a little bit orderly. It's sort of like Pickett's charge. They go up the hill very nicely in the first year or two because there's order there.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it gets sticky. And then suddenly things happen. And then you start to have to balance things off. And so suddenly you start to get massive and different cuts in odd places and in odd areas. And I'm sorry to say that I'm beginning to smell that that's the trend that's beginning to happen. The numbers I've heard in the military in terms of the number of personnel going down, that's not good. And what's more is it freezes everybody, too. We were talking before about how people do budgets and how people look at contracts, et cetera. People get scared. They don't want to make a decision. I mean, if they can push it off at this point, they probably will, and mm-hmm. I don't blame them.
Yeah. Do you agree with that scenario that you laid out, CR, and could be in well into fiscal 14 before we see it? Is that your personal view as well, just as what you're observing, Trey?
I don't see Congress coming together around the appropriations process in an effective way. I think we'll have a short-term CR, perhaps 30 days or so, to lead up and perhaps get through the debt ceiling discussion. And then I think we'll see another one that'll get us to roughly the end of the year. I think we're going to have something very similar to what we have this year, where we got to roughly January, and then we had an appropriations for a number of agencies and a one-year CR for the rest of them.
More budgeting by crisis in your view too, Ron?
More budgeting by crisis. I think he has the pattern exactly right. I think what you're going to see is, I mean, we've already stalled at this point. People are, in addition to preparing budgets for FY15 when they don't know what 14 is going to be, when they're barely getting 13 out the door. Tough to do. They're taking a shot at it right now. They're being told to take certain percentages off the top with the assumption that sequestration will simply stay. So again, a very difficult planning environment, a very difficult environment for personnel in terms of, you know, who do you hang on to? What kind of training do you do? What kind of IT are you going to purchase? You just don't know. And that lack of surety does not produce a system that works very well.
Trey Hodgkins' choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is the story why the budget outlook is even worse than you think, Richard Cohen's piece in Federal Computer Week, and you can find it and all of the stories on the countdown this week, linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Ron Marks' choice for the second most important story of the week when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Ask the CIO is brought to you by Learning Tree International.
Sanjay Sardar is the CIO of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. He says FERC is considering letting employees use their personal smartphones and tablets on the agency's network.
We allow access to our guest network from your personal device, but we're looking at using something called an authenticated device program, which means that you will have to authenticate that device with us, not just your ID.
Listen to Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. Learning Tree is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government, and they're on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with Learning Tree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. For 50% tuition savings, go to learningtree.com/CIO. That's learningtree.com/CIO.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Appropriations bills to fund the Transportation and Housing and Urban Development Departments have passed both the House and Senate committees, both chambers agreeing on $140 million to keep open air traffic control towers. But the overall funding levels are very different. The $44 billion House version is $10 billion less than the Senate version. If the conference committee is unable to iron out a compromise, FAA could be looking at closing control towers, which would mean major delays again at airports in the fall.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I've been an air traffic controller for more than 21 years. I chose this career because it gave me the chance to do something very important. Air traffic controllers like me take great pride in working hard to ensure the safety of 70,000 flights a day in U.S. airspace. We strive to reach the highest level of professionalism. So on your next flight, sit back and relax. We'll guide you home safely. Visit NATCA.org.
Later sleep, more calories. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS Health Beat. Some of us are morning people, some of us are evening people. A lot of us, in addition, don't get enough sleep and weigh more than we should. And a study indicates people who stay up late, sleep too little, and are obese also have signs that raise concern about potential heart attack risk. At the National Institutes of Health, Giovanni Cizzo looked at data on 119 people who fit those categories. He says they had higher resting heart rates and higher stress hormone levels. And he says,
if you are an evening person, you tend to eat more. You tend to eat more fat than carbohydrate and eat more often after 8 p.m.
The study is in the journal PLOS-1. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
How can continuous monitoring and real-time reporting be used to increase our situational awareness? What are possible solutions to challenges faced in adoption of these practices? Discuss these topics and more on October 2nd at the Symantec Government Symposium in Washington, D.C. Learn how to manage the threat lifecycle using actionable intelligence and more at the premier event for government cyber and IT professionals. Register today at symantec.com/symposium. That's symantec.com/symposium.
Now your Federal News Radio Cybersecurity Update, afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour. The American Civil Liberties Union says the Internet is less secure as a result of the National Security Agency's efforts to crack encryption. Officials from the Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project at the ACLU say by defeating encryption, NSA is exposing the public to criminal hacking, foreign espionage, and unlawful surveillance, and is eroding the economic competitiveness of U.S. companies. Earlier this week, The Guardian, The New York Times, and ProPublica reported the NSA manipulated global encryption standards and use of supercomputers to break open encrypted communications and data. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Back on the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Trey Hodgkins and Ron Marks. And Ron, your second most important federal news story of the week is from Information Week. The headline is Big Data Analysis versus Government Spending. And we talk about big data a lot in this program, and the government's trying to wrap their arms around it now, but it seems like we're in the collection and comprehension stages and haven't gotten yet quite to the analysis and action stages. Is that a fair assessment on your part?
I think it is a fair assessment. I've been watching this now for the last 5 or 6 years. We certainly know how to accumulate it, and we've talked a little bit about that before. We're still trying to figure out how to tag it in useful ways. That's still going on. The analysis part is tough. I mean, I had a software business for a few years, and I must admit I had enough people coming in with beta of one form or another showing me the latest, greatest way that they're going to sort this information out. It's no knock, but it's difficult. There's a lot of it. It's varied in terms of, you know, everything from what we're doing here right now to video to, you know, encrypted things as well else. You're trying to take a lot of different kinds of databases and combine them together. The guys who I always felt sorriest for were the National Counterterrorism Center, NCTC, which has a requirement to gather all these databases together to search through that big data and find evildoers. And yet, at the same time, the tools that they had to go in and do it, not that great. And I still think that's an area that we're still having a tough time with. We're reaching out to the private sector. We were talking a little bit before about Amazon being brought in to CIA at this point. The IBM and Amazon are in a dispute right now. So they're trying to use all the tools available, but just the sheer volume of this stuff makes it very hard for any analyst to get a real good handle on what's all available out there.
Trey, this story from Information Week says that federal IT professionals estimate agencies could save potentially 14% of their budgets by successfully analyzing big data. That sounds like an awfully optimistic number, I guess I'll say.
I think at this point it probably is optimistic. It's certainly not outside the range of possibility. But what we've experienced with the member companies that are selling these products to the government and then watching the government try to adopt this is a flagging in their ability to, and I focus more on the return on investment, the ability to demonstrate that. So it's an interesting number given the experience we're having is that it seems to be trouble or the lack of tools to demonstrate the value that this could bring and how they could better serve constituents and all the things that are driving their missions. So we'll see. I think, you know, things like sequestration, for example, have had an impact on this because they no longer have the kinds of resources they might have had to write the business case and develop the ROI and how can I take this data set I own, position it, make it interoperable, change the data the way I need to change it, and then manipulate it in a way to drive savings or create efficiencies. You know, those things are not happening with the right investments. The other element here that, you know, may be driven by some of the personnel things we talked about is that that may force some of these agencies to go back because they simply don't have the people to do it in other ways that they might have done in the past. And the computing power that can be brought to bear today changes that equation.
Ron, what Trey just said to me is a little bit troubling for one main reason. If he's correct and when he talks about the inability of agencies to be able to write business cases for something that the IT pros believe could save them $500 billion a year because they don't have enough people and money to write those business cases and demonstrate that ROI, that sounds to me like the beginning of the circling of the drain, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's bad.
As he was talking, I was thinking to myself, you know, this town first missed the late 1990s when the real IT revolution hit, and it hit because of budget and because people inside didn't understand what was going on outside. The nice part about the last few years is they did have enough money. They were able to have the kind of experts in-house who could reach out and at least have some clue about what was being said. And all I can think of is, you know, when you cut back money in the United States government, you know, the last thing you cut back is personnel. But what you sure do cut back is expenditures on R&D and IT and education and that kind of thing. So you're already going to go back to the lowest cost, which we talked a little bit about before. And but that also includes people. You know, who are you going to hire? And also, by the way, who are you going to hang on to? Who's going to want to hang around in the middle of all this, especially if they can go out to the private sector and get themselves a better job that just pays more and has a better sense of morale, certainly, than being under attack within the government. So I'm not so sure this is such an optimistic scenario right now, and it's a shame because you're just right on top of getting to the point now where big data is actually being used somewhat effectively.
Mm-hmm. Trey, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, the recent technological analogy we have is cloud computing, and you no longer have to make the argument in the government that that is a technology they ought to be embracing and that they can't. They see it, and they figured out how to demonstrate the return on investment. We don't see that as much with big data, and that's the point I was trying to make. And so in a relatively short period of time, you've had the government certainly get in a good direction of catching up with the commercial sector in the cloud computing space. We don't see that on the big data side, except in some of these niche areas that they note here, some ISR and intelligence activities, and clearly waste, fraud, and abuse is one that the government, I think, has decided that's a low-hanging fruit area. So you look at some of the entitlement programs and things like that, looking for fraud in the providers or the beneficiaries, things of that sort the government has found. But how do you take data sets that belong to the ag department and translate that into better food supplies and things like that? That's where I know they're working on those things, but we don't see them coming to fruition as rapidly as we've seen some other things.
And the piece of that that is maybe a little bit troubling too, Trey, is that I've never had an agency give me a number for improper payments along the lines of what you're talking about that's greater than 3%, 4%, 5%. Now, they may be, I mean, that they think they can get it down to. So they're coming from a higher number than that down to that range. But the spread is not that high. So we're not talking about world-changing amounts of money that they expect to be able to use that data. I'm just exclusively in the waste, fraud, and abuse area is what I'm talking about.
I think the thought is that they can squeeze it a little further, that there are, you know, in tax avoidance, for example, there are areas there where they've been unsuccessful. We've all heard the numbers about the uncollected taxes from businesses and individuals. There's some area there. And then I think they also believe that once they get into some of these data sets and they really start crunching the numbers or putting them out there, exposing the data sets and let others crunch the numbers, that new patterns emerge, that new capabilities come to the fore, and new ways of tackling these issues can squeeze those numbers even greater. And any waste, fraud, or abuse, I think, certainly the politicians will argue, is unacceptable.
Ron, this story says only 31% of federal IT professionals believe their agency's big data strategy is sufficient to deliver on that potential to save the kind of money that we're talking about. Is that might not be terrible, given how early it is for agencies to be dealing with the big data issue.
Yeah, there's a part of me that does trouble me about that, though, and that is a gap that we've seen in this town for years that I thought was going to close a little bit, and maybe it has just a little bit, which is that the IT professionals, those people who understand what can be done and how it can be done, don't necessarily interact well with those people who finally get the word to execute. The bosses and the IT guys don't speak the same language. It's often tough to get that message through, even when you've got a good CIO in there, in part because he doesn't have any money for the most part. He's got the title. So explaining to someone why, you know, if you spent X amount more at this point, that it would make sense when he has to worry about the current budget situation. I got to worry about keeping personnel paid. I've got to worry about doing other things here. It's a tough sell. Just briefly on the cloud for a minute, you know, again, it's funny how different parts of the government take a different approach. There are a lot of people within the intelligence community and a lot of people within DOD have enormous heartburn about the cloud and the ability to secure the cloud. That's something else that hasn't translated well through either. In fact, it's interesting sort of the other way around, where leadership has grabbed it. Jim Clapper, for instance, is DNI, has latched onto it. But as you begin to talk to the security people underneath it, they're saying, well, wait a minute, there's some problems here, and we shouldn't be going ahead with it that quickly. You know, again, the IT area for the government is still, in my mind, a very difficult one. I'm selling this stuff now for, you know, 15 years on and off, and it's still interesting to see what people know and don't know. Very, very different than the private sector, where you have a much greater knowledge and much more willingness to spend in that area.
The second most important federal news story of the week, according to Ron Marks, is from Information Week. The headline is Big Data Analysis versus Government Spending, and that analysis also of a Meritalk survey titled Smarter Uncle Sam, the Big Data Forecast. You can find a link to that story and all the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The top of the charts next, the most important story of the week from Ron Marks and Trey Hodgkins, when we come back on the Federal News Countdown in just a moment.
Agency of the Month is brought to you by CenturyLink from this month's agency, Department of the Navy.
Rear Admiral Sean Buck is director of the Navy's 21st Century Sailors Office. He describes the Navy's suicide prevention policy.
The way that we are handling it in the Navy is with another continuum, the continuum of stress. And on the left side of that continuum is all of the things that we're putting in place for prevention.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com.
Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government. And the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and responsive dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Read something interesting on federalnewsradio.com and want to share it with your colleagues and friends? Our enhanced articles make it easier than ever to recommend a story to your Facebook friends, tweet it out to your followers, email it to your colleagues, and now share the story directly with your connections on LinkedIn and Google+. One click is all it takes to share the latest news affecting federal employees and government contractors. federalnewsradio.com.
Now your Federal News Radio DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. The Defense Department is outlining new goals for the combined federal campaign charity drive. Deputy Defense Secretary Ash Carter says the goals are changing because of financial uncertainty. He says he still hopes defense employees will contribute to the CFC, but understands that they can't match last year's donation average of $515 per person. You get your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Ron Marks and by Trey Hodgkins, and all of the stories linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to the top.
Number one.
And Trey Hodgkins, your most important federal news story of the week is from Politico. The headline is White House IT officer says NSA not a global business setback. This is Steve Van Roekel speaking on C-SPAN, a show co-hosted by Politico. And what does he mean by not a global business setback?
Well, that was sort of the impetus for me to select this article because from his perspective, he does not agree with the argument that there is a chilling effect on U.S. companies' ability to engage in global markets. And we would take a 180-degree different perspective on that, and we've seen it in some places. And as this information drips and drabs out, the latest news about Brazil and their reaction, some of the reaction is heightened because of the G20 going on. But the idea that these companies are not sharing in some of the tongue-lashing and economic impacts that translate to economic impacts for them that Obama's experiencing in the international world is really unrealistic. These companies are already challenged in many of the markets they try to enter because they're not domestic. They have competitors in those marketplaces that offer the same products or similar products, and they're trying to break in. And to have this hanging over their heads is sort of, here's my market offering, it's the best in the world, and the perception at least is that if I connect with an American company who provides me these technical capabilities, I could also be exposing my data to the U.S. intelligence community or the data of my citizens that I'm putting into those technical capabilities. So we would disagree with this perspective and have a very strong opposite reaction that there is a ramification, and that needs to be part of the conversation and the understanding about how we go forward with this and how we address this issue is what do we do to make sure that we have assurances around there's a safe harbor agreement with the EU about data. Another major element of this conversation that's been brought up as part of the transatlantic trade discussions that are trying to get kicked off is cross-border data flows and how data can flow across borders and be protected from the vagaries of the various nations that may may go to or transit. And those are issues that we need to include in the conversation and make sure that the American companies don't have a disadvantage when they want to compete and bring those technologies elsewhere.
Now, I know perception is reality, Ron, but here in this case, isn't there a disconnect there? Because if companies are apprehensive about buying cloud services from the United States because they're afraid that their information might be exposed to U.S. intelligence, we talked about earlier in the program, you made the point, everybody's doing this, or a lot of countries are doing this. So why should I feel more comfortable buying cloud services from a German cloud provider or a Great Britain cloud provider or an Israeli cloud provider, all of whom have very active intelligence capabilities and communities?
I was just thinking to myself and maybe smiling just a little bit. now that I'm an old and gray and a geezer and I've been around this stuff for 30 years, my initial reaction to a lot of it is really big deal. And that is my reaction to it, which is that essentially there are certain kinds of material that are going to be purchased because people have uniqueness to them, whether it's a Microsoft, whether it's a Google, whatever it may be. And spy, and country spy.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of Chinese computers in the United States sitting in the hallways around here. And I look at them sometimes and I just think to myself, well, I know what I would do.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure that, let's put it this way, it certainly puts a chilling message out. Or what I would say less charitably, it reminds everybody that there's no Santa Claus. That, in fact, we've been doing this for a long time. It will continue to be done. And while we might want to ignore it, the fact of the matter is it's going to be there under any circumstance. Will governments overseas give us a greater, you know, shaking down to these companies? Yeah, probably. I'm going to be a little more skeptical about buying it, and they'll push back on it. But ultimately, I think the damage is fairly minimal when it's all said and done.
And I want to be clear, Trey, I'm not saying that your members and other vendors aren't seeing this happening. I'm just saying if I'm the end user customer that the United States companies are trying to sell to, it doesn't seem reasonable from the customer's point of view to say I'm not going to do business with United States companies when these other companies in other country or when these other countries are doing the exact same things we're doing.
Well, it's sort of the outrage that we've seen from a lot of these other countries that, oh my gosh, NSA was spying on name the foreign leader or mm-hmm. foreign economy. And then a piece of this information was leaked, and it showed that our intelligence communities were coordinating with their intelligence communities. So to your point that there's a lot of coordination, spy, nation spy, yes, it's going on. But I don't think anybody wants to have that sticker attached to them, and they're arguing that it shouldn't be. They're not doing it, and that's the scenario and the environment these companies are trying to market in.
Ron, back to something that you said, there's no Santa Claus?
There is no Santa Claus. I'm sorry to say. There is an Easter Bunny, as near as I can tell, but there's no Santa Claus. I'm holding out hope.
I don't think I believe that. Trey Hodgkin's most important federal news story of the week is from Politico Pro. The headline is White House IT officer says NSA, not a global business setback. And you can read that story at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Find a link to it at least. And you can hear Ron Marks's most important federal news story of the week up for discussion next on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
The benefits of cloud computing have been proven. Agencies continue to migrate more applications to the cloud to realize these benefits. But are we ready to mission-critical apps to the cloud? Join us on Monday, September 9th at 2 p.m. to hear executives from HHS, District of Columbia, American Red Cross, Amazon Web Services, and Unisys discuss the next steps in cloud computing. Tune in on September 9th at 2 p.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, sponsored by Unisys.
At BAE Systems, protecting troops is always a top priority. That's why we create combat vehicles that not only help them win the fight, but bring them back home. Our vehicles are designed from the ground up with the latest integrated solutions, all with troops in mind. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at BAESystems.com/nextfront.
On October 4th, the USO of Metropolitan Washington hosts its Star-Studded Stars and Stripes fundraiser at the Sheraton Pentagon City Hotel. Mingle with top government contracting executives, celebrity supporters, and our nation's heroes. Nosh on great food and bid on amazing auction items, all for a great cause. Join as USO Metro announces its 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring top corporate donors for the year. This premier business-to-business networking event helps to fund vital support services for local troops and their families, including programs for wounded warriors and caregivers, children with deployed parents, emergency housing and food assistance, and many other critical programs. USO Metro's Stars and Stripes is presented by AT Solutions. Top sponsors include Boeing, Maryland Live Casino, CenturyLink, Sierra Nevada Corp., and many more. Individual tickets and corporate sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com. Search charities.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. The Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation, known as FIT, was created by OMB to reduce the costs of financial systems, improve the quality and usefulness of financial data, and provide standards for processing financial data throughout individual federal agencies. Join AFSIA Bethesda and top agency officials September 25th at the Bethesda North Marriott and Conference Center to discuss what FIT initiatives are being implemented and tested across government agencies, as well as industry's role with the federal shared service providers and CRS.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The most important federal news story of the week on this week's Federal News Countdown, as selected by Ron Marks, is from the Washington Post. It's Marjorie Sensor's piece titled, Pentagon Buying Official Forecasts Much Tougher 2014 for Defense Contractors. And this is coming pretty much from the very top, as only two steps above Frank Kendall when it comes to talking about what the Pentagon budget and buying patterns will look like in 2014, Ron. So this is coming from right at the heart of the OSD, and it doesn't sound very good, does it?
No, not really. I mean, take this word for what it is. This is coming from the Secretary of Defense. There's no way in the world he got out the door and made this statement without everybody checking all the way up the line through OMB. And it's a statement, we've talked about it or inferred it in the conversations throughout the hour, which is that we're now in a position where we have an unsure budget for the next few years. To say the least, it's going down. There may be additions to sequestrations, additional volunteer cuts that OMB has been, quote-unquote, suggesting. So if you're trying to buy large-ticket items right now, or if you're thinking about expanding on your number of personnel and all the rest of it, it's not going to happen. If I'm a contractor right now and I'm looking in, I'm a little cross-eyed. Anybody who's doing CETA work, who's selling people right now, I think is in trouble. That's just going to be an easy thing to cut back. The large IT acquisitions at this point, I think there's going to be some to-ing and fro-ing on. I think the big data centers at this point are expensive, but if you have a system that needs to have this stuff, they're going to have to do something. I'm not quite sure what that is. They seem to think cloud is the solution to it. I'm not so sure it is, but I'll cede that to the more technical guys. Certainly in terms of large-scale purchases of, you know, major projects by the military, I mean, you can see it right now in terms of them taking a look at anything from an airplane to a missile to whatever else. I suspect what you're also going to see is a real review of satellite programs right now as well. There are a lot of air breathers out there. They're doing a very good job. The question, and you can hear it, you know, sort of in the low rumbles right now, why are we spending billions on this when we could get X? If contractors can come up with that solution, then that's great. I think you're going to see a lot of emptying of buildings along the Dulles Corridor. I think you're going to see a lot of people either downsizing at that point. You see it in Booz Allen. You see it in SAIC. You see SAIC is splitting right now, and there's a reason for that. They're trying to move the commercial side out right now. They want the government to focus on the government, but they're heavily sort of, you know, seated types. As is Booz Allen, and that's going to start costing him in the next few years.
Trey, this sounds pretty dire. This story quotes Frank Kendall saying, "I don't want to make major commitments to contracts we may terminate once we get into 14. We're going to have to make some hard choices in the next few weeks about what we do with some of our programs." And the buzz that we hear coming out of the Pentagon is this is big stuff. This is not just trimming around the edges. These are some of the iconic programs that have been going on at the Pentagon for a long time. And I don't know if this sounds like a shape up or ship out kind of thing where you have a certain amount of time to get your program in order or not, or if they might just start cutting.
No, I think we're beyond the point where you can demonstrate that a program is good or a program is bad. I think that there are some tough decisions to make of that sort, but I also think we're going to start cutting into the other programs that are critical, some of the weapon systems. There was a story this week about cutting down the total purchase on littoral combat ships down to 26 out of, I think, 75 or so was the total number they were looking at buying. So significant cuts in the size of the existing contracts. There was also coverage this week about changes in the JCS, the Joint Strike Fighter. I alluded earlier that, you know, a condition here that we're experiencing is it's sort of this very strong market performance by many of these companies. And that's a condition we described before sequestration hit, is that most of those companies and these big weapons platforms and big contracts are multi-year contracts and the funds were obligated. And what we're starting to begin, we're on the front edge of those funds are running out, and we're reaching the point where they have to go back to Congress and ask for more money, either continue that work, they're going to decide they want to exercise an option, and that's when the funds are going to no longer be there, or they're going to do what they were doing in a different way, or they're just simply going to have less to do what they were doing before. And that's what we're going to start seeing, and that's when we start having the kind of personnel cuts. I agree, services are going to be hit pretty hard. But in the end, we're really beginning to see this tough cutting of sequestration and some of those other budget cuts we should expect.
We just have about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, do you see the same thing that Ron sees, which is a shakeout along the toll road?
I don't know. The silver lining I still think is out there for technology companies is at the end of the day, they can demonstrate a cost savings. They can demonstrate efficiencies that if they get acquired and employed and deployed properly, they can replace workforce capabilities that may be lost through attrition. So I think there are some silver linings and some opportunities. I think that they're going to do better than some of the other more traditional marketplaces that are selling to the government as well.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Ron Marks. It's from the Washington Post. The headline is Pentagon Buying Official Forecasts Much Tougher 2014 for Defense Contractors. You can find it linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And that wraps up today's Federal News Countdown. Thank you for a terrific maiden voyage, Ron Marks. Very nicely done.
Thank you very much.
Trey, great to have you back on the program again. And the Federal News Countdown returns next Friday in the 3 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Hour number 2 of today's In-Depth with Francis Rose is right around the corner.